Hey, welcome, welcome to the Reboot Radio Hour. We are here, Joe. I'm here today with you.
I know, can't get any better than that. How are you?
I'm doing great, yeah. Really kind of entering this holiday time, and I'm so glad to be here today. We have an amazing guest, two amazing guests. Yes.
And it's a sort of a bi-coastal show, right?
Yes, it is, yes. Aaron and his wife, Lisa, will be joining us from close to San Diego, but Aaron's originally from Philadelphia.
Well, let me just welcome Aaron and Lisa into the broadcast. How are you both?
Hey, we're great. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good afternoon. Yeah.
Yeah, and so just so I don't want to make you jealous, but here in Philadelphia, it's sunny and 95 degrees. I got my suntan lotion on. It's just great.
I'm in my bikini.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it's crazy here. We're out by the pool. Or is that just a little delusional? Is that wishful thinking?
Yeah, completely wishful thinking.
Yeah, well, it's chilly here, man. We're wearing, I've got long pants on and a t-shirt versus a tank.
Wow.
Everybody else, my wife is wearing a long sleeve sweater. So.
And by chilly, what are we looking at there?
Well, we have a house guest with us staying this week, and she's doing some chores around the house, and I asked her to water the plants outside, and I found her in her bare feet watering outside.
Okay. We're on our way. You know what? Let's continue this show. We're leaving now. We're going to the airport. We'll see you soon.
This week will be pretty much every day is about 73. 73 and sunny.
Oh, God.
And what are we here in Philly, like 36?
I think we're something like that.
36 and sunny.
Yeah. I know. But you know what? I mean, by the way, the weekends have been miserable here. We've been getting rain constantly. Mm-hmm. And so at least we got sunshine today, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's a sunny day because we're going to be having this amazing and important conversation. I'd love to jump on in.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so Aaron and Lisa are guests on the Reboot Radio Hour, where we integrate Eastern and Western medicine and discuss all things health and wellness. And today on the show, we are going to be discussing Aaron's recent, kind of year ago, diagnosis with ALS and the challenges and the courage and the fortitude that you both have needed to kind of show up in yourselves with. So welcome, and I'd love to jump into that conversation.
Yeah, so and obviously we want to thank you for obviously, you know, talking about it in such a we're really appreciative, obviously. So if you would, Aaron, so we talk about this. Talk about, you got diagnosed a year ago. At what point prior to getting diagnosed were there issues or you could tell that something was going on? And that you needed to get checked out. And what were those issues?
Yeah, so, you know, 2 years ago, we bought a piece of property here in northern part of San Diego, and I discovered this love for gardening and landscaping and stuff. And so, you know, I spent my days when I wasn't working, you know, working on the garden. I was digging trenches and, you know, and doing excavating, all kinds of stuff. And I thought, you know, and I was at headaches and pains. Well, last August, September, I started to limp.
Okay.
And I just had this slight limp in my right leg. I thought it was my hip, you know, I've just been working too much. And then it slowly progressed. And then around October, my family from back east came out, and it was starting to get worse. And what was also accompanying it was this strange kind of weakness where, you know, if I was just walking around, the limp would get a little worse. And then I would just like run out of steam. Like I couldn't take a next step and I would just slow down. And that's what started me, the concern that there was something else going on. And my sister's partner was a nurse. And she mentioned, when I described some of the things, she mentioned possibly a pinched nerve.
Right.
And so that's what started the concern. And then from there, I went and saw my primary care, did some blood work, and there were some markers that were really concerning. There's two in particular. There's the liver enzymes and CK levels, which is like your muscle enzymes, that were really elevated. And that directed her to send me to my cardiologist because we thought it was possibly
statin.
So I had been taking, I had a heart attack in my 30s, just shy of my 37th birthday. So I've been taking statins for many years, and it's not uncommon to develop an intolerance to statins. And that's something people should really be aware of, is that if you're on statins and if you feel any kind of muscle aches or joint aches, that's something you should talk to your doctor about.
And well, so by the way, I am on a statin, and I do get some joint aches.
Yeah, so really important to pay attention to that.
And with that, too, what we learned is, though he had been taking red yeast rice extract for many years, and it was at the advice of the doctor that he take it. And then later we found out that it's actually a statin.
Yeah. So the first theory, call it like October, November, I got in with my cardiologist. And the first theory was this statin-induced myopathy, you know. And the good news about that is you stop taking the statins, typically 30, 60 days, maybe a little longer, it completely reverses. Unfortunately,
I think an important question is, how old are you right now? Like,
So I turned 55 in July.
Yeah. So you're young, you're active, you're buying this property, you're trying to move things along, and your body is then suddenly telling you that it's not cooperating. Yeah. Right.
And I was in really good shape. I was in arguably some of the best shape I had ever been in my life.
Right. So skipping really forward a little bit, Aaron, can you tell us, like, when you started to get the diagnosis? There's all these other ideas of what might be happening, and then what happened from there?
Absolutely. So, you know, it started with my cardiologist, his first theory. Quickly, we realized it wasn't that. And over November, December, I started very quickly losing muscle mass. He was able to, and this was a blessing, he was able to help me get into a neurologist very quickly, and a top neurologist.
Which is
hard to do. And so that was, mid-January, I got to see the first neurologist. They did their, you know, his initial exam, and then they send you off to do all the tests. And this is one of the things with ALS now that is improving, is there's not a test for ALS. So it's an elimination of everything else, but they've gotten much better at understanding all the things they have to eliminate. So I spent the next 30, 45 days having every kind of test you could imagine. And then mid-February went back to see this neurologist, and then the neurologist does, you know, their special test is called an EMG. And that's where they put essentially probes into your muscles. They send voltage through, and they time, you know, how long the communication. They're testing the communication between your brain, the nerves, the muscles, and back to the brain. And they're listening to the muscles. And that's their special art that they do. And it was at that moment after that test when this neurologist first mentioned the possibility of ALS. He then offered to be my doctor, but actually recommended that a referral to another organization, actually UCSD.
University of California.
University of California has an ALS team. He referred me to them for another opinion. And because teams like this have everything you could possibly need under one roof, he had two more tests he wanted to do just to rule out, you know, some really kind of unlikely possibilities. But he helped me get that appointment. A couple weeks later, I went and saw this team, and it's a learning university. So I'm in a room with doctors and students and all, and I'm standing there, and they're watching me. And one of the interesting things about ALS is I call it the aliens, but you know, you get something called fasciculations where your brain is trying to talk to the muscles. The communication doesn't happen. And so you get this kind of crazy twitching all over your body under your skin. And so they're all standing there watching them and counting them and looking them. And they did their exam. After that, they essentially said, we're not giving you any official diagnosis. But at this point, from what we've seen, we concur. Next week, we'd like you to come in. This neurologist wanted to do his own ENG because that's their thing. They all have their own style. And so a week later, I think it was March 7th.
It was March 7th. So that was my dad's birthday.
Yeah, March 7th. They did their EMG, and afterwards he came in and they gave us the formal diagnosis.
You know, while you're going through all those tests, so what was the time length from when you first started? Because you know, it's got to be grueling when it's a process of elimination. I mean, how long was that process, number one, from start to finish? And number two, what's going through your mind? And I say to both of you.
Well, from the first neurologist appointment, call it about 3 months. Huh. But I got to tell you, I was very, very fortunate.
Yeah.
Because one of the problems with this disease, because it's been rare and not a lot of attention put towards it, is we've met people that have taken months, if not years, to get to a diagnosis. And all that time is being mistreated, misdiagnosed. And so I feel, while it was grueling for me, I feel very, very fortunate that I was able to get into the system so quickly and get to a diagnosis. Because once you get that diagnosis, then a lot of the benefits that are available become available immediately. So some of the legislation passed in the last several years, you know, has really opened up possibilities and resources for people with ALS. So once you get that formal diagnosis, you now have resources available to you. So it's just so important now that they continue to, you know, improve the testing and the diagnosis. So it was grueling 3 months, but I feel fortunate, honestly.
It's amazing that you can say that there are components that feel fortunate, that you feel fortunate about. You can see some of the goodness of getting that diagnosis quicker than others usually experience.
What about Medicare? Does that kick right in?
It does. So fortunately for me, when I started getting sick at the end of last year, I had an opportunity to stop working. So I actually had insurance through June. But once not only Medicare, but
Social Security.
As soon as I was diagnosed, I was eligible for Medicare, state disability, and Social Security. No waiting period.
Right.
In fact, now, you know, you got to get the paperwork done, all those things. But it wasn't until like May, June that I started applying for all those things. But they actually backdated it back to the day of my diagnosis.
Amazing.
And
wow.
That is amazing and just so important.
There are special, that's correct. There are special designations when it comes to Social Security disability, Social Security,
yep.
And Medicare, which sometimes take years, a year and a half. And there's a large amount of individuals, you know, even who eventually get it, that get denied. And for that first 6 months, some people living in their cars that are disabled, but the designation for ALS, okay, and for select, you know, illnesses, it kicks right in, and thank God for that. Thank God for that.
Yeah, there was an act passed during the Obama administration, the ALS Act, and that's when that came to be.
Wow,
and. Back then, most people didn't even know what ALS was. People still now don't know what ALS is.
Aaron,
it's
do
amazing.
You mind sharing a little bit about that? Lisa, Aaron, what do you now know is ALS? Can you give a couple minute description?
So
it's also been called Lou Gehrig's disease.
Lou Gehrig's disease,
right.
Is how most people know about it. So it's a motor neuron disease. It is in the same family as MS, Alzheimer's, and Parkinson's. So it's a disease that affects the motor neuron system. But essentially, it is the death of the nerves. And the problem with ALS is they don't know what causes it. There's basically two types of ALS. There's two categories. There's familial, which is the genetic version, which is less than 10% of the cases. All the rest of us have what they call sporadic. In the genetic versions, they've been able to find, I don't know, a half a dozen or so markers, proteins, genes, call them what you want, that there's some commonality. They have not been able to identify any commonality between the rest of us. And so they don't know what it is that causes this rapid nerve death. But when the nerves die, there's no longer communication between the brain and the muscles. So the muscles begin to no longer be used, they atrophy, and ultimately, in 100% of people with ALS, it results in total paralysis. And so the four things that happen with somebody with ALS, and in no particular order or combination, you lose the ability to move, the ability to eat, the ability to speak, and the ability to breathe. The two types of onset, there's bulbar, which people, their initial signs and symptoms have to do with maybe with upper body. So eating, swallowing, often the first sign is slurred speech. The other type, which I think is more common, I believe, but which was for me, is limb onset. You know, you start getting a little numbness in a toe, or you start limping, or your hands don't work quite right. And then from there, everybody's different. Literally, everybody's different. And that's what makes this such a difficult disease, is that on day one, there is no prognosis. You know, there's the averages of how long somebody with ALS may live, but they don't know what it's going to do until it starts doing it. And that's what is so challenging about this disease. For me, it started out, it was all lower body. It was 90% of what I was experiencing was in my leg, my right leg. I started having problems walking. I had symptoms and little things all throughout my body, like little, twitching and little bit of this and that, but it was mostly my legs. In July, I got COVID, and I had 6 weeks of really bad coughing. Well, with ALS, if you overuse any muscle set, they don't recover. And so when I got COVID, I had to really I was using all the muscles that you use to try to cough and things like that. And unfortunately, that now triggered all the muscles associated with my breathing. Mm-hmm. So now I use a ventilator almost 24/7. I use it in a non-invasive way, like a BiPAP. So I'm breathing pressured air. My lungs are in great shape. My oxygen levels have not dropped below like 98-97%, but my diaphragm and my muscles that you need to inhale and exhale aren't working, so I have to use pressured air to keep my lungs filling.
Aaron, are you able to be living at home, and how has your everyday life kind of been impacted slowly or quickly through the last few months? Maybe
we are living
at
home.
Summer. Yeah.
Yeah, we're living at home. Yeah, we I lived in a 1,600 square foot townhouse in a little community, you know, tight community with a 10x10 concrete patio for 20 plus years. And when all of our friends were downsizing, Lisa and I were like, you know, we've never been upsized. And how about a piece of land? And we bought a almost 2-acre property on a hillside out in the country. And I fell in love with the land and working the land. We just, you know, we were scared because I can tell you, people in good health, our piece of property is treacherous. We built a pool that is 13 giant steps on top of the hill above the house. In our house is a ranch style, which is great.
Oh,
it's all one level. But once you get out of the house, you're on top of the hill, and it's a really steep driveway.
Oh,
but
gosh,
we love it here, and it's a magical place, and we really wanted to stay. And so one of the things I have available here that people actually throughout the United States, the ALS Association is an amazing organization. We have a local chapter here, and one of the early things that we did was they came out and they kind of did an assessment. They walked around the property and all through it, all around it. And we said, you know, could we practically make this work and without, you know, a tremendous amount of work. And they thought we could make it work. It was not going to be easy. It was not easy, but we intend to stay here. This is where I intend to be.
We
love our home.
Thank God it's a rancher home, and it's you know, my wife and I have a it's like a 2-story townhouse, right? I can tell you this, and you know, of course, we're going through different elements, nothing compared to ALS, but it's torturous. The stairs are what really are so that being a rancher is just a godsend. I'd like to ask Lisa. Lisa, talk about, you know, your experience, you know, throughout the process. You love your husband deeply. And as a spouse and a caregiver, talk about, you know, your experience throughout this, you know, entire process.
Well, at the beginning, when we got the diagnosis, I mean, it was shock, disbelief, grief, you know, you name it, all those feelings came up. And you know, that happened for both of us. And for a very long time, and even a little bit today, there's denial for me. Like, is this really happening? So it's been tough from that regard. And as far as like day-to-day life, I've been fortunate that since COVID that I've been able to do the work at home, go into the office a few days a week situation. And my employer is very, very understanding. And so pretty much now I work from home most of the time, unless there's a real need for me to go into the office. And we have a lot of friends that want to come and visit. And so I take that opportunity when friends are here that I'll go into the office. And so that I know that Aaron is with someone and that, you know, he's got some help that he needs. Now, granted, he can still be by himself, you know, for long periods of time, but it's always nice to have someone here just in case, you know, he takes that fall that, you know, everybody is concerned about, you know, the doctors say don't fall. And so, you know, and it's, he can still, you know, make his own meals if he wanted to, but, you know, he's looking at conserving energy to doing things that he loves to do, like playing guitar. You know, he's
really,
yeah. So he's, you know, last night with our guest, you know, he did play a couple songs. He doesn't play as strong and hard as he used to, but he still plays, and it gives me joy when he does that.
I love that. Yes.
By the way, I'm a bass player, so, you know, we could start a bi-coastal songwriting team.
Absolutely. Yeah. The one of the most, you know, ALS, one of the biggest learning. I mean, right now my body, I can walk. I can walk across the room with no assistance. Generally, I use a walker because I want to stay safe. And when I'm out of the house, I'm in a wheelchair, and I'm getting fitted actually this Friday for, I call it the chair. You know, it's the chair that you see, the kind of the class. It's a big 400 or 500 pound thing that when everything does go, if everything does go, you know, it's the ultimate chair you need. But
Medicare only pays for one chair.
Yeah, Medicare only pays for one chair. So anything you need before you get that chair is you find other resources. But it's
you have to be mindful of how you're spending the money.
How much is a chair like that? What's the value on a chair like that?
$60,000-$70,000.
Oh man.
So
more than a car.
Yeah. ALS is, I think, listed statistically as the most expensive disease that exists today. It's on average $250,000 based on the average lifespan of somebody with ALS, which is, you know, sadly 3 to 5 years. Mm. But the percentage of people that are making it beyond that is improving. But I'm able to, you know, I've not lost anything completely. You know, my walking is definitely compromised. My breathing is definitely compromised. I have bits and pieces of me that have been affected, but I'm still, I can eat and I got a great appetite.
Great.
We've met people who can walk and move around great, but can't talk or eat. But energy, it's the number one thing for me is I wake up with a limited bank of energy. I talk to people, I tell people about, you know, people play video games and you got the little character that's got the little green bar next to it. And as they're fighting and battling, that green bar gets shorter and turns yellow and red.
Right.
That's me. And when that bar starts getting shorter, I have to stop. I'll literally be walking across the room and I'll run out of steam and I can't take another step. And so when I wake up in the morning, I'm very, very, very choosy. I really think hard about how I'm going to use my energy, talking, you know, who I talk to, how long I talk, that all uses energy.
What about your stress? You know, so sometimes even like just even working on a computer can be stressful. Does that impact your energy level?
It's interesting. That's such a great question. I learned early on that it's the stress, anxiety, emotional type things, negative energy, almost impacted me more physically than physical activity. And so one of a lot of things I did early on is I really focused early on. My path forward was two-pronged. I joined an experimental trial through UCSD, which I'm doing, which is Western medicine. And I started researching and doing things that were solely focused on my heart and my spirit to learn how to let go of anger and stress, not let it in. And now I can articulate to people, you know, if I'm around somebody or any kind of negative energy or stress, I'm learning how to just not let it in. I meditate every day. And those practices have become perhaps the most important thing for my health. Because if I keep the negativity away and I protect myself and my stress levels, then I can play more. I can garden, and I can play guitar, and I can do more other things that bring me joy.
So let's do this. We're going to take a little break, and we have so much more to talk about. We'll have more from the Reboot Radio Hour with Felicia Greenfield-Blau and our guests Aaron and Lisa Friedman. in just a moment.
Hello there, this is Nat King Cole wishing you all a happy and a Merry Christmas.
The joy of living is in the giving. So let's give lots of toys for tots. Toys, toys, toys for tots. Some have too many, some haven't any. If those who have, give those who haven't. Oh, what a Christmas day. The Marine Reserve will help you, will help you fill your sleigh with lots and lots of toys for tots. So give a little toy today.
Since 1947, the United States Marine Corps has been helping Santa fill his sleigh, making happier holidays for deserving children right in your community. Go to toysfortots.org and learn how you can make a difference.
Battles aren't won solely on the field. That's a common misconception. Battles are won within, over enemies of fear, enemies of doubt. In that place where promises are kept. Promises to oneself.
This is a physical training event.
Promises to one's community.
Helping people move debris out of their house.
Promises to one's country. In the heart of every Marine, you'll find a promise. A promise forever kept. A promise of battles won.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Reboot Radio Hour here on WWDB Talk 860. Shout out to TJ and our producers booth. Of course, our host, Felicia Greenfield Blau, and we have some fantastic guests. We're bi-coastal show here calling in from San Diego, where it's 26 degrees, and here in Philly, it's 95. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I get that mixed up?
I think that's bad.
Or is that wish? Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You know, my partner, my broadcast producer, Joe Krauss, always says radio is theater of the mind. So we can just pretend like we're in San Diego right now.
Yes.
And we're on location at the house. You know, we can dream here in Philly.
Yeah, the warm sun beating down on us. Man. It would be so lovely.
So, we're here with Aaron and Lisa Friedman Let me ask Lisa and obviously Aaron, jump in. How do you keep a positive attitude and outlook every day without letting this overwhelm you every day so that you're mad at the world? What is your disposition and how do you keep it positive?
Or do you?
Or
one
do
day
you,
at
right,
a time.
Maybe you don't keep it positive.
Right.
Like, what does that look like?
Well, It's I have learned that I can't look at the future. I can't look at the past. I just need to focus on today. And that's what keeps me going.
Yeah. It makes sense. The here and now.
It's really all we have. Like, all we have is what is actually happening right in this moment. Everything else is,
and it's a great point. And do you find yourself when you talk about, you know, thinking about just the here and now, living for here and now, and so that you make every moment try to count in a positive sense?
Yes, absolutely. And you know, before all of this happened, I had been on a journey myself for self-improvement for several years. Including, you know, learning how to do Reiki, and I've been doing yoga for years, and so I'm kind of on that path of natural healing, and so I use that as my, I guess my crutch or my go-to when
I even like to,
you know,
think of it, Lisa, as
tough.
Like your root, you know,
my root. Yes, thank you. That's the word I was looking for, Felicia. But yeah, you know, it's interesting because, you know, early on, Aaron was Googling everything, you know, Dr. Google. And I refused to do it. It's like I couldn't look at what was happening, you know, to people and, you know, what the predictions were and things like that. So I was, like I mentioned before, I was in a state of denial. And, you know, we had, we were involved in the first ALS walk. The ALS Association puts on a fundraising walk every year. And they have videos that you can send out to people as a way to, you know, raise money and awareness. And I made the mistake of looking at one of the videos and I just started bawling. Yeah. It was like, you know, I can't even imagine getting to that point of what I saw in the video. And so like, it's one day at a time focusing on, you know, what we have together right now.
Yeah. Every moment, I try to truly live every moment as beautifully as I possibly can. Oh. I mean, that's really it. I mean, it's, you know, I have days, I have, sometimes I'll have a week. I'm doing, I mentioned the experimental treatment, and sometimes the week following that can be very difficult. And a couple of weeks ago, I had the hardest, darkest week of my life. And when you're in the middle of that, you know, it's hard to have hope that you're going to get through it. But, you know, you find any moment of joy you can, and you just hold on to it. But it is, you know, it's moment by moment, day by day. I'm so thankful every morning when I wake up and get out of bed, and my intention every day is to experience and give as much joy as I possibly can. That's my life now.
Aaron, I know some things that bring you joy. And Joe, I don't know if you know this, but Aaron and I were friends before even kindergarten started.
Hmm.
Yeah, we were in a carpool together, and
so Aaron, can I get some of them stories, please? We're on live radio. I mean, you know, only 10,000 people listening. So,
yeah.
But yeah. I mean that history. I mean that's such a great thing to have friends. And by the way, I you know that's such a the fact that you're still friends.
Yeah, but the interesting thing is like Aaron went on and lived his life after high school, and I did the same. And, you know, through this diagnosis, Aaron reached out of looking for some support, connection, community, ways to find some enlightenment around his situation, and it reconnected us in such a beautiful way. Yeah.
And let me, on that note, Aaron and Lisa, are there things that you notice today? Because, you know, we all, the hustle, and it's interesting. I try to do the same thing. I woke up the other day and I'm 59 years old. And, you know, I've done some shows recently on, you know, healthcare and some different, you know, I was just things that, you know, and getting a little bit older and aging and seeing what, you know, people go through, you know, it's a very vulnerable population. I did a broadcast yesterday with a company called Retiree First, and they handle a lot of programs for retirees. And those things are relevant now in my daily life. Okay, so you're dealing with a lot of different things. In your situation, a lot of those experiences are heightened. But I'll ask both of you, are there things that you know, you said when you wake up, you're happy, you know, Aaron, obviously for the day. Are there things that you've both learned? Have there been any revelations and things that you appreciate? And I'll say the stars, the sky, the wind, and, you know, I mean, fresh air, but anything that both of you have really appreciate more now than you would have had you not had this situation.
Well, I'll start. It was very interesting, I think, for the both of us that when we got the diagnosis, our mindset shifted like immediately. It was like nothing else mattered. I was always one that I was afraid of things in the future. And that went away. It was like, I got to live for today. And it was really interesting about how the mindset shift happened so quickly.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Yeah.
No question about it. Go ahead, Aaron. Yeah.
So for me, you know, I always considered myself to be a grateful and appreciative person, that I did not take things for granted. What I have now discovered in this journey, every day I discover 100 new things that most people would never even think of that you can be grateful for.
Yeah.
And when people ask me about this, I tell them, you know, take a few minutes every day while you're young and healthy to just think about your life and your body and the thousands of things there are to be grateful for that may not seem important right now. And those are the things that I think about. The ability to hold a fork, you know, the ability to take your next breath, to wiggle your toes, to get outside. When you start focusing on those, the amount of things that are no longer, you know, there's just the things that are just not that important, just roll away.
The material things.
Yeah. The material things, the petty things, the negative things. You know, when you focus on all the little things, the rest of the roll off.
And I'll say this, I appreciate your emotion and your insight. The one thing, and I'll say to Lisa is, you know, in this world, nobody gets out unscathed, okay? And, you know, this situation is obviously an extreme and very difficult situation, but the essence of your husband, okay, is apparent.
We're texting back and forth,
about what a great speaker you are, Aaron. And you know, just how impressed I am, and we both are, with how giving you are. And I know, you know, like I remember my wife and I were going through a difficult situation. It was a marriage situation. And I remember thinking to myself, like Aaron just said, in a different way, you know, I thought, you know, this is our house. Okay. These are things that we together picked out. This is the little things that I never thought of before. Okay.
Yes, you're taking on value.
The essence of my wife and thinking about, my perspective changed in a different way, of course. And she's got psoriatic arthritis, and none of her friends, you know, people can't see it. Okay. And by the way, it's obviously not on the level that ALS is, but it's one of those diseases that it's a process of elimination. And so, going through it,
when people don't know and see, they kind of expect, like, why are you taking more time? Why are you having more needs? Because you look pretty fine to me.
Oh, yeah.
And I know, Aaron, we've spent some time together, even went to a Grateful Dead concert.
Oh, yeah,
together.
I was seeing that. Was that picture of the concert?
Yeah, exactly.
So you guys are all deadheads, huh?
Yeah, we're deadheads.
Yeah.
Aaron's been leading my hand, leading the way. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yes. So, but besides the dead shows, I'm curious then, what have been some things that you both have done for yourselves and together over the last couple months to make time that's special for you guys, to keep you guys intimate and connected?
Well, so one of the cool things we did when we bought this piece of property is we wanted to do some special things right away so that we could enjoy them as long as possible. So we built a pool here. Neither one of us has ever had a pool. So we have a beautiful pool and a hot tub. And we've done a ton of just beautiful gardening. And so we love to have beautiful places where we can sit and look at beautiful things. But we also have this this amazing spa that we went kind of a little overboard and put in.
It's like a resort.
It's cool.
Awesome.
Yeah,
amazing.
We've got foot jets and calf jets and that. So we do that, and we'll go out. We'll go out at sunset, and the spa and the pool are at the top of the hill, so it's above the house.
Tremendous.
And so we can sit in the spa and watch the sunsets.
Wow. Oh my God!
Yeah, it's
that's
gorgeous.
Pretty special.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I mean, I imagine the words "I love you" come out a lot. You know.
Yeah.
I know there's somebody else that's really special, and I just want to kind of acknowledge Jordan into this conversation.
Yeah.
Our son.
Oh, so okay.
Our son is 27. He lives about an hour and a half north up in Huntington Beach, Surf City, USA, and he comes down regularly. For me, in particular, I am at my very best when I'm with people. I love people. I love my tribe. I love people. I love to talk. I love to tell stories. And so we had an extra office in our house. We just converted it into another guest bedroom so we could have an extra guest bedroom so that people can come and visit.
That's so great.
But
and I know you have a lot of people
from
Philly, right? You still have friends from Philly?
We got friends from Philly, and I've always invited them to come out.
By the way, you have a new friend from Philly sitting right here.
You know what? Yeah.
Joe will bring his microphone.
That's right. And I tell him, you know, this is we have a large piece of land. And one of the hardest things for me is I still have all these projects and these things that need to be done. The weeds don't stop growing just because I can't pick them. So come out. Stay, free room and board. You know, maybe you do a little gardening.
A little labor.
A little Aaron, labor. How do you manage that? How do you manage kind of seeing the hill with weeds? I know this a lot with my patients who are going through cancer. Like, there are things that want to get done and you need to get done, and you actually can't. You can't physically do it anymore. How do you manage some of that?
This is one of my bigger challenges, and it's a learning curve. It's daily lessons, because we have done, when we bought this piece of land, it had been neglected, it was in bad shape, and we pulled up in the driveway and had all these visions of things we wanted to do, and we did a lot. It's a mind-blowing how much we did in the short time we've been here, but there's lots more to do. And then there's all the maintenance. It used to be I didn't want to go outside. I couldn't go outside because I immediately saw, all I saw were the things that
you couldn't do,
that I didn't finish, that needed to be fixed. But I'm learning now. And a lot of it, I mentioned, you know, part of my journey has been, I've been working with some shamans, curanderos, indigenous people from along the Amazon, doing different plant medicines, learning how to journey. And that is helping me to stay and learn how to be more present. So now I go outside and I look around and I can enjoy all the things that we've done and all the beauty, but still at some point I see the weed.
Right.
And I know that weed is just going to get bigger. And the longer it grows, it's going to get bigger and harder to pull or more expensive. But I've now learned how to ask for help, which was a lesson I did not understand in my life.
You've always been the fixer.
I've been the guy who did stuff.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So are you similar like that?
I am. Well, yeah, I become that way. But I'll tell you the one thing. And Lisa, it's interesting. Companionship, as I've gotten older, me and my wife, like, I'm a better husband now than I was when I was a kid, no question. Although I've, I'm still passionate about the things I do. But I want to ask both of you a question before I go in that direction. And we only have 5 minutes left. By the way, if there was ever a show in the history of my career, which is about 10 years now, that I wish I could double the time. But I want to ask you about hope. And, you know, do we have any hope that they're going to come through with some kind of a breakthrough here with this ALS? I mean, I don't want to give up on this situation under any circumstance. Where are they with research here? Okay. You know, why does this have to, you know, have an ending before it's time? Where are we with this?
Yes. So thankfully, the resources that are now becoming available are continuing to increase for research. There are probably hundreds, if not maybe even thousands, of trials and studies being done globally. I'm in one, and so the money that's being raised, the resources that are being focused towards this, are exponentially more than they were even just a year or two ago. Wow. People today, thousands more people, hundreds of thousands more people today know what it is. You know, I don't know if you remember, but a year ago, 2 years ago, they had this thing on social media, the ice bucket challenge. Yes. That people were doing.
Oh, yeah.
People were doing this thing. They didn't know what this was. That's really one of the things that kicked us off. So thankfully, the work is being done. And you know, when you talk to the people who have it and who are living it and the doctors, there is hope. They have hope. They're not going to stop. And when you have people that are not going to stop, you have to have hope.
Hey, Aaron, with just a minute left, I just want to ask you, you know, what would you want to share with your mom and your dad and Lisa and your beautiful son and his girlfriend? Like, you have this community of people, you know, what would you want to say to them?
You know, you got to live every day and every moment as beautifully and joyfully as you can. One of my dear friends shared with me the concept of thinking beautiful thoughts and walking a beautiful path. And if you can start young, don't wait till you're old and you're sick. Start now. Start now to learn how to let those things go. Start now in really understanding how many things we have to be grateful for. Let those things go that will accumulate and take over your health. Yeah. Because things like this, I have to believe, are the cumulative effect of just all the crap that we did not deal with properly. I believe that. So learn now. Start now. That's my advice.
Beautiful.
And I just want to say this as we wrap the broadcast up. We just want to thank you, Aaron, and Lisa for sharing your story. And we have, there's so much more to talk about. Felicia, just an incredible show.
Incredible. I love you both. I'm here supporting and I'm so grateful that you took the time today to be with us so that you both could share your story a little bit. It's an important story.
And I hope it inspires other people because what you're talking about, your attitude, you're a special person, Aaron, and once you beat this thing, I think you should get into radio, no question about it. I want to thank everybody for tuning into the Reboot Radio Hour with Felicia Greenfield. Wow, we want to thank our guests, Aaron and Lisa Friedman from San Diego. Want to shout out to TJ on behalf of everybody on the panel.
Steve-O, thank
Dr. Meng Shang, thank you. And Steve-O, thanks Steve-O for making this happen with Felicia. I'm Joe Dougherty. Have a great day, everybody.
My daughter is Marina. Marina has a rare form of children's eye cancer. retinoblastoma. Her doctor sent us to a specialist, and then the specialist sent us to St. Jude. Within the first couple weeks of us getting here, I was just so scared. Like, I think the reality just hit me, and it kind of hit me all at once. I had started to cry, and her doctor came in, Dr. Brennan came in, and just didn't even say anything, sat down beside me, and, like, hugged me and held me while I, like, was literally sobbing. And she just said, it's going to be okay. We don't have to worry anymore. The treatment worked, and we've saved her eye. This place has been such a blessing for us. There's no way we could have paid for treatment back home if we had to. We can come here and we can just solely focus on taking care of her and helping her heal.
Finding cures, saving children. Learn more at stjude.org.